So, Lecture 14, October 17th, 2022. Lecture notes, page 121. I hope you had a pleasant fall break, to the extent you got a chance to get a fall break at all. A lot of you were just working. I had the exciting fall break time of sitting and looking at flag midterm videos. It's not as much fun as you would think it is, and I'm unfortunately conversing with a few people who have, or trying to converse with a few people who have been flagged for their videos or for their midterms, and I'm continuing the march. So if you hear from me, it's probably not great news, but you should talk to me. All right, so this Friday is this Networking for Good. You've been seeing a lot about, or you've seen it a lot over the weeks, and it would not be the worst thing in the world to get together with them to help fight help out with the food pantry patrons with this event. Midterm one, the curved final, as you know by email from me, 71.9% average, which is right about what we'd expected. I boost it, round that to 72. I boost it up to 72 points when it needs to be, which is always. Mini test six, you know, opened last Tuesday. And we'll close tomorrow evening to give you a couple days to accommodate your fall break. And then back to our regular scheduled testing, Tuesday, Saturday, starting with mini test 7. And it will open on our regular schedule, Tuesday at 8 a.m. Enhanced Learning Extra Credit number 5, up and running, closing Wednesday at 11:59 p.m. Research Extra Credit number 1. 298 students, a little over half the class participated. Each of those has 0.5% added to their grade. That average for the overall class is sort of a silly number. It doesn't mean anything, except that about half the class took it. So when you look at your grades, if you completed it and you're not, it doesn't show you having 0.5%, contact me or the researcher, but I think we did a good job of capturing that. So business in the news, Tesla and a Chinese company that you may not have heard of, BYD, break China delivery records as electronic vehicle rivalry goes global. Tesla, Inc., and its Chinese rival, competitor, BYD Company, have each broken their monthly records for deliveries of electric vehicles in China as the global competition between the world's biggest makers of new energy autos intensifies. So we spent a chapter talking about global marketing, and here we see global marketing at work in the real world, or global competition. Tesla, the world's biggest EV maker, delivered more than 83,000 Model 3Ss and Model Ys in September. The American EV maker, controlled by Elon Musk, had been ahead of BYD in China before production was disrupted by COVID-19 and its outbreaks in the country. So the impact of COVID on business continues to be felt. BYD made almost 95,000 EV deliveries in September, a record high for the Sichuan-based company. BYD's sales, including hybrids, totaled 201,000 units in September, also a record for them. The rivalry between the world's leading EV companies intensified this year after BYD, which counts Mr. Musk's fellow billionaire Warren Buffett among its key investors, abandoned the production of traditional gasoline-powered vehicles entirely to fully focus on new energy cars. So here we're seeing a shift in the business model of this good-sized Chinese company. BYD has dominated the Chinese domestic market this year. Behind the growth is the company's ability to produce its own batteries, as well as many of the parts its vehicles use, ensuring stability along its supply chain. We've been talking, and you've been hearing, you know, about supply chain issues during COVID, post-COVID, things to haven't straightened out. And in this case, a company who was able to make their own pieces and parts and batteries is, of course, going to have a competitive advantage. BYD does. While Tesla tussles with BYD in China, BYD is also expanding abroad. Last week, the German rental car company Sixt said BYD will supply its fleet with several thousand EVs by the end of the year. The initial commitment will pave the way for the German company to purchase a total of 100,000 EVs from BYD by the end of 2028, said Sixt. So their global marketing strategy that our domestic company is going to have to fight against globally. BYD's foray into Europe began with supplying electric buses for public transport in countries including the UK, Sweden, and Spain. Last year, it exported 100 Tang Sports Utility EVs to Norway. So here is their global marketing strategy. Get in with the public transportation. Now get in with the car rental places. People will know who we are. They'll be familiar. They'll be aware. And pretty soon, we're outselling Tesla in Europe. As it seeks to capture the global market for EVs, BYD is moving to produce more passenger cars overseas. Recently, it set up an overseas passenger factory on the east coast of Thailand. The plant is expected to deliver 150,000 passenger EVs in 2024. So their corporate growth strategy, creating additional output. Macy's has been doing pretty good, avoiding the inventory pileup that has been plaguing other apparel chains. At Kohl's, fleece jackets that arrived too late for last year's winter season are finally making it onto their shelves. Where has that inventory been for the last year? Sitting, taking up, you know, warehouse space, which is not inexpensive. It costs money. And, of course, ties up capital, ties up cash. You paid for it, but it's not being sold yet. Nike is stepping up discounts on apparel and other goods after its inventory ballooned in the latest quarter. So we're seeing some issues with retail marketing. We're seeing some supply chain issues in marketing. Meanwhile, Macy's is rolling out new dresses, new suits, new boots, and other fall fashions. More than half of its offering for the holiday season will be new. The department store giant has so far avoided the worst of the glut of goods that has tripped up so many retailers. Its inventory was up 7% at the end of its most recent quarter compared with a year earlier. That's in contrast to a 48% jump in inventory on hand at Kohl's, 44% at Nike, and 37% jump at Gap. So here's the idea of managing your retail inventory. And what do you do when your inventory jumps 40%? I assume you lower prices to sell stuff off. Macy's and other U.S. chains face an uncertain holiday season with high inflation prompting consumers to pull back on some discretionary purchases. So here we're seeing the impact of economic factors on consumer demand, inflation being a big one, potential recession coming up being another one, we'll see. Macy's credit card data early in this year revealed cracks in the shopping trends based on their data, so they cut back on some merchandise orders. Here again is the importance of data analysis to see trends, to impact your marketing plans. Again, my data analyst people, there weren't that many. Nobody today. Think about the importance of analysis to your future. The key question was, how do we get the right composition of inventory items, said Macy's finance chief Adrian Mitchell. Where do we need to pull back in certain brands, and where do we need to add? So forecasting consumer demand and managing retail inventory. Macy's had an easier time making those adjustments than some other retailers that sell more private label goods. What are private label goods? We're going to talk about later on in branding, but who knows what private label goods are? Private label goods? Are you waving at me? No, you were just scratching. Okay. No one knows what private label good is at all? Do I see a hand? Yo, what's a private label good? Goods that the store sells, private label, that some other company made for that store. I'm not sure if that's what you were saying. But private label goods are goods that I'm selling under my name, Kroger's, Macy's, if that's the case, Gap, that some other manufacturer I contracted to. They do it to my specs. They do it on my demand. Macy's does less of that than some other stores. So Macy's had an easier time making those adjustments than some other retailers that sell more private label goods. Less than a fifth of Macy's sales come from private label compared with about a third at Kohl's, and nearly everything sold at specialty chains like Gap and Old Navy. So it says Gap on it. They don't literally manufacture it, but they contract it out to help others do it. So this is what I say. A private label product is manufactured by a contract or third-party manufacturer and sold under a retailer's brand name. The retailer specifies everything about that private label brand. The point here is, it's harder to cancel private label orders. Because you've contracted with the manufacturer, you're taking ownership of that goods earlier in the production cycle, and it's not easy to cut them out. You got a contract. So this is the idea of brand management and how you choose to get your brand. Macy's didn't navigate the shift in consumer demand perfectly, but it's moving quickly to clear out the excess with the help of data analytics. One more time, the importance of data analytics that target slower selling items with steeper price cuts to get them out of the way. So the importance, again, of data analytics to marketing. And finally, Netflix. How many of you guys have membership or parents membership in Netflix? At least half the class. So Netflix reveals an ad plan price. Let me say that again. Netflix is revealing an ad plan price and a Nielsen partnership and more basic with ads details. So last week, Netflix revealed details for its upcoming ad-supported subscription tier dubbed Basic with Ads, which will be available to U.S. consumers on November 3rd. Will cost $6.99 a month. The streamer also announced a partnership with Nielsen for measurement. So we're hearing about a new product release. We're hearing about pricing strategy in that mix and partnerships. The service will initially launch in 12 markets. Canada and Mexico will launch first on November 1st. The UK, Australia, Brazil, France, Germany, Italy, Japan, and Korea will join the U.S. on November 3rd, while Access in Spain will debut on November 10th. So here we're seeing a global rollout of a new product across various regions. The U.S. plan is $3 cheaper than its current base tier. Netflix said the prices of its $9.99, $15.49, and $19.99 subscription tiers will be unaffected by its ad-supported edition. Obviously, they must know what they're doing. They're a big company. I head scratched a little bit. How many customers are so strapped that they want to save $3 a month to be infested with advertisements? Obviously, you must think there's a segment out there. How many guys would do it to save $3 a month? One, two folks, all right. Three folks. Well, maybe that's a big enough percentage in a mass market for it to make sense. In comparison to this pricing strategy, Paramount Plus and Peacock's base ad-supported tiers each cost $4.99 a month, and HBO's Max is $9.99 a month. So we're seeing a bit of price competition in this streaming marketplace. At launch, viewers will be served 15 and 30-second ads before and during shows. For film, Netflix will only include pre-roll before the show for new release originals, but will integrate mid-roll advertising, interrupting the movie, in movies over time. So here's their ad slot strategy. And of course, they're generating revenue with all of this. We've sold out all of our ad inventory for launch, said Jeremy Gorman, Netflix recently appointed president of worldwide advertising. To make the story a bit shorter on the slide, but longer when I talk about it, they're partnering with Nielsen, who is, among other things, a viewership measurement research company. Because if you're going to sell advertisements to people, you have to tell them what your reach is, right? How big your audience is, what the audience composition is. Nielsen's going to help them do all that. They're a well-known company for that sort of research work. And they'll then be able to use that information to sell you ads targeting Gen Z or baby boomers, whatever it might be. So that's the part about Nielsen partnership being up there. Oh, so we talked a couple, Mark in the news is a little bit ago, so the student writes me, I just want to reach out and show you a photo that I took at Walmart the other day. Since you discussed this one in class, Kellogg's has released the Just Add Water cereals, and I found it interesting that you discussed it. Now it's on the market, so in the blue on the right-hand side, here's our Just Add Cold Water cereals. So thanks to Ashlyn Menmuir for sharing a real-world example of our real-world stuff as it happens. You guys know her? Yeah, no, all right, you just, all right. So now we're going to pick up lecture notes, page 121 and page 434 in the textbook. We're going to wrap up our understanding of the basics of marketing research, but not there. With a fairly elaborate example. Again, what I say about these sorts of things is hard to find a current example that's as good as the example I have already in the lecture. This one's going to walk us through all the way of the research process as MTV a while ago determined what was going on with their target market because their sales were flagging. They go through some ethnographic research to really understand that consumer, bring it back, and it influences their programming, some of which is still relevant today. Some of these things you'll say, I know that. It's still out there today. Some which is come and gone. So it's a really nice pragmatic example from Frontline. And it was actually put together for a totally different purpose. But let me see if I can get these two slides to work for me. Giving them credit.
Frontline is made possible by the annual financial support of PBS viewers like you.
Thank you, PBS, for this example. And let's see if this works for us.
Of the five media giants, the coolest conglomerate on the block is Viacom. And Viacom's crown jewel, there on the second floor, is MTV, which last year earned the company $1 billion in profits. A few years ago, when their ratings began to slip.
There was a perception that MTV had lost its way a bit with the young consumer. Ratings were down somewhat. Some of the trend studies said that we were less cool, less creative than before.
So MTV had the humility to realize that cool was not their birthright, that it belongs to kids and kids keep changing. If they wanted to stay cool, they'd have to change right along with them.
MTV felt like we needed to get a closer connection to the audience. What we said, if we know more about them, know more about their lives, know more about who they are, what they want, what they don't want, we can make a better MTV, has a better connection with the audience, if we talk to them and listen to them a lot more.
We immersed ourselves in research about the fall of 97 and have been able to turn that around to where now our rankings when it comes to creative or original or funky or anything you would care about, musically relevant, have went way, way up, and our ratings are their highest in their history.
The new MTV is all about learning what kids really want, then delivering it to them.
Yeah, this new CD, Granddaddy.
To ensure that bond stays strong, MTV must understand where teen culture is moving. Market research is the mantra, and its guru is Todd Cunningham.
Some of this music is dead on for exactly what kind of stuff that our audience is going to want. And the research efforts at MTV are certainly legendary. There's been a kind of feverish addiction to research and understanding young people, and that's been embraced from the very top down.
MTV let us in on their techniques. Todd Cunningham told us to meet him at an address in the small town of Island, New Jersey. A short time after we arrived, a black town car pulled up. Cunningham, a former advertising industry executive, emerged with a member of his staff. This little field trip, Cunningham had explained, is called an ethnography study, in which MTV market researchers visit a typical fan in his home.
Hey,
Today, MTV is meeting John, an ordinary kid in every respect, who is carefully screened to make sure he is just that. It is hoped that by studying John in his natural habitat, MTV might gain insight into one of the most valuable segments of their viewing demographic, the teenage male.
I'd love to see, like, clothes. Like, what's your favorite thing you have? What's your favorite shirt?
I don't know, it's probably one of my sweaters. They're in my drawers, if you want to see them.
Okay, well, we can look at that in a minute. What else? What else? What are the kind of things you wear usually? Like, what's...
I wear a lot of, like, khaki pants.
Yeah.
And, I have some suits for church or whatever.
We shut the door in their bedrooms and talk to them about issues that they feel like are really important to them. We talk with them about what it's like to date today. What's like dealing with their parents? What things stress them out the most? What things are like really on the hearts and minds of them and their peers? I'm just curious about like things with like, you know, obviously if you want, just like with your girlfriend and stuff like that. And I mean, this is, we always just ask these kind of questions about, are you like, how long have you guys been dating?
Since June 1st.
It's captured on video. So we have a camera crew, sound and light crew there. We cut that videotape together, put it to music, edit it in an MTV-style way. We then take that around and show it to various department meetings, share with them the insights that we've learned.
So what happens to all this careful research, all the hours and dollars that MTV spends learning about who our kids really are? When all the tape is reviewed, what portrait of the American teenage male emerges?
The water Hopkins on my leg.
His critics call him the Mook. That's right. M-O-O-K. Mook. And you can find him almost any hour of the day or night, somewhere on MTV. He's not real. He's a character. Crude, loud, obnoxious, and in your face. He's Tom Green of the Tom Green Show, and he's the daredevils on Jackass who indulge in dignity-defying feats like poo diving.
Brian Dunn, this is poo diving.
Oh, bro! He's those frat boys and their whipped cream bikini girlfriends on MTV's constantly recurring spring break specials. He has migrated to MTV's sister network, Comedy Central, where he's the cartoon cutouts of South Park, or the lads on The Man Show.
The Juggies look nice, don't they?
Oh, yeah! Eat those beans.
So does the whole teenage experience come down to this? Are our boys mooks? Is John a mook? I don't think so. Maybe all that research isn't really about understanding John as a person. It's about understanding John as a customer. I mean, they don't call it human research or people research. They call it market research.
The MTV machine does listen very carefully to children. When corporate revenues depend on being ahead of the curve, you have to listen. You have to know exactly what they want and exactly what they're thinking so that you can give them what you want them to have.
It's funny to think that the most advanced form of marketing today comes in the form of a 300-pound body slam. Professional wrestling is the most popular form of entertainment among teenage boys in America. Today, wrestling is sheer spectacle, a magnificently honed lure for the teenage male channel surfer. And where there's pop, there's money. That's why wrestling has been propagated across the entire spectrum of teen media. It's broadcast 15 hours a week on 5 different networks and is seen by 15 million people.
It is huge with our audience at sort of program levels that I could have never imagined. It is the hottest thing going among males 18 to 24 and, in fact, among teen boys. And so we felt like while we don't want that to be the defining element of our business, it was okay to be in the game.
It was simply too big to ignore.
That's what it was.
So we're flagging with our audience. What do they want? Let's do some research. We do come up with an evaluation of the consumer as being the Mook. Anybody listen to Rover's Morning Glory? Radio show. We'll hear from Rover later on. This is a highly popular morning radio show in Cleveland. Those guys are all, and the gal, are mooks. Crude, loud, obnoxious, amusing morning show people. How many of you guys grew up and are you guys old enough to have grown up with wrestling on TV? Wrestling? Yeah? How about, how many of you guys are still watching South Park? Okay, so no, we're not mooks, but we like the stuff that mooks like. Oh, okay, fine. And I'm amused because this thing was put together actually as a criticism of business and marketing. And they're saying, well, they aren't capturing the whole person here. Right, it is marketing research. It's consumer research. What do these consumers want from us? But as you saw, hopefully, this walks through the entire five-step process of doing marketing research. And at the time was quite successful in delivering action that worked in the marketplace. Yeah? So, I believe that, if you want to know more, we got marketing research, marketing 35050, or marketing analytics, 35060, or you actually, if you're interested, you can have a College of Business Data Analytics minor, all of which could stand you in good stead in the future, as analytics are certainly important to us in business. So we've been thinking at pretty high levels about all of this stuff, and we've been thinking about it both domestically and internationally, and we now move down a bit of a step. Whether we're talking about a domestic audience or a global audience, what is my shorthand for marketing? It's the discovery, and satisfaction of consumers' needs, wants, and desires at a profit through an integrated effort of the firm. But we also are smart enough to tell ourselves or know ourselves, everybody doesn't want the same thing domestically from us. Everybody doesn't want the same thing from us globally. So what is this process now for making use of the research, developing our strategy to satisfy appropriate groups of people? STP, as you know them as Stone Temple Pilot, no. You know as the motor, or no. STP, segmentation, targeting, positioning. Key factors in doing marketing today is a key marketing framework, lecture notes page 125. So here we are back in our little model. We thought about our company mission objectives. We thought about doing research. We thought about the crust factors that impact our consumers and us. We're now talking about selecting the consumer using segmentation and targeting, and then getting that concept to the consumer, select our positioning statement. We're going to talk about STP, segmentation, targeting, positioning. Let's start with an example of a pretty good company that's done has a pretty good handle on the idea of market segmentation, changing markets, how to keep up with those markets over time by paying attention to the changing consumer needs, wants, and desires. Hewlett-Packard runs, of course, printers and more. HP's imaging and printing group, IPG, is, quote, the leading imaging and printing systems provider in the world for printer hardware, printing supplies, and scanning devices, providing solutions across, quote, their quote, I emphasize, customer segments from individual consumers, B to C, to small and medium businesses, to large enterprises, B2B. So how has it obtained this outstanding position in the field? Well, let's go back in history a little bit in time. 1980s, personal computers become available for the first time with businesses. They were too expensive, too rare for consumers, and they didn't do much that a consumer would want them to do. But business users needed a fast way to get good quality hard copies of information off their PCs. And we may have chatted about this in other contexts, but if you see old movies of computers, they had line printers, big devices, and you could hear them go ka-chunk, ka-chunk, ka-chunk. And on green and white paper, they'd come popping out a line at a time off of the mainframe. Not what you want if you want a Word document. So how are we going to do this? Well, HP recognized this need for fast, good quality hard copies from PCs, and they developed the LaserJet brand of printers. And this virtually created a desktop publishing boom. Prior to this, you wanted any sort of device or piece printed up, you had to go to a printer. You had to go to a third party to get this stuff done. Suddenly, you could begin to think about how you could do this for yourself. As a leading innovator, HP set the standards for printers. Competition entered the printer field, but HP was able to offer even better printers, including high-capacity models for businesses with computer networks. Again, a fairly new idea. Sometimes there is an advantage to being the market innovator. And you get the knowledge, the prestige, you get the research to stay ahead of the field. Sometimes, we'll talk about it later on, there's an advantage to being a market follower. You're a late entry and you still can do okay. Different strategies, they were a leader. 1990s. Bada bing, bada boom. Personal computers become more affordable and now purchased for the first time, holy mackerel, by consumers. HP added this new segment, a B2C segment, to their printer market. They targeted the new, quote, easy-to-use printer to families. But they're used to dealing with large corporations, medium corporations, small corporations, through a particular channel of distribution that doesn't work for dealing with the ultimate consumer. So they needed to find a different way to reach this new segment, a different channel of distribution, one of our four P's, place. So they used its sales force, obviously, not to call on 330 American consumers. That would be silly. But instead to use their sales force to sell to discount retailers and sell them on the idea of carrying HP printers. Then those retailers agreed to carry the printer, in part because they were good value for that ultimate consumer, and because HP spent money on publicity and sales promotions and advertising, and those things attracted customers who were ready to buy. So they were using an integrated marketing program to pull people into the stores so they would buy the printers from HP. Cool for them. 1990s, when Windows showed consumers the possibilities of color printing, HP was ready. HP was the first company to make color inkjet printers. HP then developed new color printers to meet the demands of the new digital camera market segment. They were ahead of the curve there again, providing value to the consumer. In the 2000s, well, HP has always been a computer company. On July 1st, 2010, Hewlett-Packard acquired Palm. The addition of a Palm handset to the HP product line increased their mobile presence. On July 1st, 2011, HP launched its first tablet named the HP TouchPad, bringing WebOS to tablet devices. In May 2019, HP bought the supercomputer specialist Cray Computers. Anybody ever hear of a Cray computer, a Cray supercomputer? Yeah, until I did this, I didn't know that it was bought out by HP for $1.3 billion in cash. Yay, Cray. In 2015, HP split into two separate companies, HPE, Hewlett-Packard Enterprise, selling servers and enterprise services, and HP Inc., selling PCs and printers. So unlike their competition, their rival IBM, which is more focused on software, HPE will focus on hardware for the foreseeable future. In May 2019, they launched the world's first dual-screen gaming laptop and a new line of gaming innovations. In 2019, they focused on a sustainable impact goal statement, efforts to hire from unrepresented communities, including women, minorities, veterans, and persons with disabilities, saw improvement. In 2019, they have a commitment to double the number of Black and African American individuals who are serving as executives at the company by 2025. They committed to donate $500,000 to social justice organizations while also matching 200% of employee donations. And they pledged to eliminate 75% of single-use plastic packaging that comes with its products by 2025 and more. So I didn't tag it here, but of course now this is sustainability, social responsibility marketing with this company that's done quite well in its domain. So HP has been successful by finding new, I'm sorry, we okay? I'm hearing things. So HP has been successful by finding new market segments, targeting them with appropriate products and services. As things change over time, they were flexible, they were changing to meet the changing needs, wants, and desires of consumers. Yay them. We good? I see pens moving. Okay. So, what about for the future for HP and others? Well, in 2018, 259 million PCs were sold worldwide, a decrease of 1.3% from 2017, and the seventh consecutive year of global PC shipments in decline. HP and Dell are trying to expand their presence in the tablet market to counter slumping demand for traditional desktop and notebook PCs. HP maintains its dominance in certain segments, such as printer and printer accessories, but there's definitely room for improvement in other areas. So we'll have to stay tuned and see how they manage. Remember, we talked about the product portfolio matrix, stars and cash cows and dogs and problem children. We'll have to see how they manage this into the future. So I've been babbling on about market segmentation and market segments. What is a market segment? A market segment is a group of customers that have differing needs, wants, and desires, or product preferences, or buyer use behavior from other segments. So this group wants fashion, and this group wants technology, and this group wants innovation, and this group wants low price. Each of these is a segment that have different needs, wants, desires, or purchasing habits. How many of you guys are lucky enough to ever take a vacation? Anybody get a vacation? What do you like to do in a vacation? What's your perfect vacation? You like to be at the beach, relaxing, sun and fun, maybe a little martini from that little guy who brings you the drinks with the little fancy umbrellas on it. Who up here? I saw another hand. Who likes vacations? Okay, what's your perfect vacation? Also the beach? traveling. You like to go around the country, see different parts of the country. Maybe it's the fall. Your idea would be to drive to New England and see changing trees and then go over to the desert and see what's going on there, for example. Who has a different style for their vacation? Yeah, what do you like? The big city, the hustle and bustle and seeing the monuments and the museums and maybe a little artwork and maybe a drama club. Do you really love the beach? Do you want to go spend 2 weeks at the beach? No, not really. No, thanks. I want to do something with my time. There are different segments of population for vacation. So here we are in the vacation market. Here's go on an authentic expedition. I think it's to the South Pole. Go climb a mountain. Go lay on the beach and have a good time in a hammock. How many people have animals that they can't take on vacation with them, pets that they have to leave home? Do you ever feel guilty about leaving your pet at home? I want to take it with me. Don't worry, La Quinta, Inn and Suites. Your pets are always welcome. There are no deposits or fees, up to 2 domestic pets, cats or dogs, not scorpions or snakes, per room. When you check in, let the front desk staff know you'll have a pet in your room. You have a differing need, want, and desire with your vacation. We have a product that would satisfy you as a segment, right? So these are all groups of folks that have different needs, wants, desires, buying preference, or product use behavior from one another, and we develop a marketing mix to satisfy them. Little market segmentation humor, courtesy of Dilbert. Stupid, pointy hair boss says, I've never managed marketing people before, but a good manager can manage anything. So I order you to go do marketing things like segmenting and focus groups and keep on focusing and segmenting until we dominate the industry. And the marketing folks say, I'm motivated. He's not a good boss. So segments are those different groups with different needs, wants, and desires. So what's target market? A target market is a market segment that the seller chooses to design a marketing mix for. I can't do fashion. I can do technology. And I don't want to do cheap price. So I'm not going to work with these folks. I'm going to focus on the technology segment. It matches my skills, matches my mission. So market segmentation is the process of going out and identifying, describing those potential target markets. How? Using those research techniques we just got done talking about last couple classes. Research into the consumers to find that somewhat low price technology, high fashion. So it involves doing research to aggregate prospective buyers into groups or segments that have common needs that differ from others and who will respond differently to our marketing action. Presumably, no matter how much I push the idea of that beach vacation to the person who wants to spend in the big city, it's not going to get exciting for them. It's not something they want to do. Thanks, but I don't want that. So I'm not going to work. My marketing mix isn't going to work for them, but it'll work for the beach people. So we need to target our market segment by positioning our offers, by building an image in the mind of the consumer about who we are relative to competition and relative to their needs, wants, and desires. But first, we need to define and describe that target market in detail so we know how to position our brand for that consumer. So, a different view. Market segmentation is the process of dividing the total market for a good or service into several smaller, internally homogeneous, similar groups, and members of each group are similar with respect to the factors that influence their demand. So we might talk about the auto industry, the car market, and I would argue for the purposes of this discussion that there is no car market. It's not a thing because everybody doesn't just want a car, right? There are different segments out there. So here are three segments. Anybody recognize that on the left by any chance? Or is it in the notes? Sometimes I ask you questions that are right in front of you. You know what it is? How about the need for speed? Love Ferrari. Or family mobile Toyota RAV4. Or the entry-level car Chevy Spark. Can you see that these consumers don't all want the same thing? They're different segments in the marketplace. LaFerrari is the Italian automaker's first hybrid offering. Equipped with a 6.3-liter V12, it'll be the quickest, fastest, and with a total of 950 horsepower, the most powerful road-going car ever to roll out of the Ferrari factory. The new LaFerrari will also be the first to feature active aerodynamics to put an even keener edge on its high-speed handling characteristics, and you too can have it if they're available today for a mere $1,416,362 base price. Nice car. You'd like one, but you don't have one. Can't afford it. What about a family mobile Toyota RAV4? Spacious, comfortable, and easy to drive, the Toyota RAV4 is a top pick for a small SUV, especially if you want a V6 or a usable kid-sized third-row seat for $26,250. Does the LaFerrari have a third-row seat? Does the Ferrari have a second-row seat? You aren't going to put a bunch of kids and sports equipment into a Ferrari. It's just not going to work. And then the entry-level car, Chevy Spark. The Chevy Spark is a reinvention of the urban runabout for those on a tight budget from 13.4. Clearly, these folks have different needs, wants, desires, value different things, and represent different segments of the marketplace. So what are some of the benefits of doing this segmentation, working out those details? Well, first of all, it allows you to do more efficient use of your marketing resources. Imagine I didn't understand segments and I was going to advertise my beach vacation to everybody. How much of that would be wasted? Well, a lot. We have a small group here, I mean, relative small, that wants a beach vacation. These other people don't want it. Production can be more efficient. I'm targeting the people that want a low-cost car. So that allows for more efficient use of marketing resources. When you think tea, what's the big tea company that comes to mind? Big tea company? What is it? You don't have an idea of a big tea company? Lipton tea. Were they a brand that's sort of wishy-washy, weak, probably not very strong, or are they probably pretty strong? Pretty strong brand. So I decided I want to be in the tea industry. Should I choose to try to go head-to-head against Lipton tea? That's probably not a good use of my resources. I'm probably going to fail. What about if I just find that there's a group that wants organic and natural teas? Lipton may have a sub-brand like that, but that's not their main forte. They aren't really concerned about that. So instead, we have Hain's Celestial Group. They focus on organic and natural resources, allowing them to make more efficient use of their limited resources. It can work well in its area of rapid growth. Oshkosh Truck Corporation, the truck market wasn't really growing that much. But as they did research, they found there was a special segment that needed additional trucks. I can't really tell. Center left up there. Hey, guys. Throw something at them for me. Yeah, behind you. Hey, I don't know what's going on, and I'm glad we're socializing. And normally I let it go. But if you socialize enough that you're distracting me, I can't quite figure out what's going on. Can we join in the conversation? You want to come down here? Can we hold off till after class? Of course, you may be talking about segmentation. I don't know. But you're distracting me. So the truck market wasn't growing very much, but they discovered that there was a need for fire and rescue trucks for airports. Obviously a pretty small segment, but nobody was doing that. And there was potential for huge growth. So now they became the world's largest producer of fire and rescue trucks for airports in that segment. Helped them out quite a bit. Now you have to be a little careful about this idea of segmenting and focusing on a niche. This example is doing too much segmentation. How many of you guys like Eggos? Eggo waffles? Eggo? Okay. But how many of you guys sometimes feel there may be a little too much choice in Eggos? So we got Eggo cinnamon toast, we got Eggo pancakes, Eggo jug pack cakes, Eggo Lego. We got Nutri-Grain, we got blueberry pancakes, we got minis, we got Sometimes consumers can get frustrated by too much choice. How many of you guys have ever gone into the store where there's a big array and the one you want, they've stopped. They've discontinued that one. No? That can be frustrating too, carrying too much. You like the one and they stop. So segmenting the marketplace can get a little confusing or frustrating for the consumer. So we're identifying wants within a market, and we're using our techniques that we talked about last time, market research, to explore the needs, wants, and desires in a market for current and potential consumers. How do we do that? Well, we do that through any of the techniques we talked about, interviewing and or observing consumers or firms to determine their behavior, their levels of satisfaction, their frustrations, what their needs, wants, and desires are that we might be able to develop a marketing mix for is the beginning of the process. How many of you guys use a fitness center somewhere? Fitness center, okay, workout center. What do people want in a fitness center? What do you want in a fitness center?
Work out in their gyms.
Work out and get buff. What's another thing that people might go to a workout center for other than, like me, getting buff? What else do people want in a workout center, in a wellness center? What am I calling it here? A fitness center. Why else might people join? Everybody here who raised their hand that was involved in a fitness center is getting buff. Yes, thank you. How about flexibility? More like yoga and stretch. Oh, jeez, I pulled something. Stretch, yeah.
Not necessarily getting buff, just staying in shape.
Just staying in shape, okay? So we might do any one of those things. There are different needs, wants, and desires for health per sentence. So what do prospective consumers share that distinguish them from other segments who have different wants? So getting into shape, peak performance, losing weight, health issues, making friends, sports focus, something provided by your employer. All of those would be different segments. And can you imagine that if you were a marketer of a fitness center, you might have to have a different physical facility, different classes, different staff, different brochure, did I say different classes, etc., for each of these groups? You're probably not going to be successful if you're trying to do everything for everyone. That's crazy. What's your segment? What do they want? Maybe you can combine two of them, but I don't think you can combine all seven very well. So we have to understand our current and potential customers and ask the question, what do you want given our product category? This is probably too much detail, but getting into shape consists of consumers who are primarily interested in improving the look of their bodies, perhaps through bodybuilding, weight training, forms of body sculpture, comprised of a younger demographic, equal mix of men and women, is interested in both the facilities and the suitable classes. The peak performers are highly disciplined, self-motivated, focused upon achieving their personal best in terms of running, endurance, weightlifting, bodybuilding. They like to own the gym, the gym rat idea. They may dominate certain pieces of equipment, may slightly intimidate the other customers as a result. They're attracted by flexible opening hours, a broad choice of equipment and facilities, changing your marketing strategy. The losing it segment refers to the goal of losing weight. Quite common for some gyms and fitness centers to specialize in weight loss programs, and overweight people perceive that regular exercise is important for them to participate. You have to be welcoming to these people. You can't have a whole bunch of domineering bodybuilders there. That's not going to work. You have to have established programs. There can be some fear of attending a fitness center where most of the customers are already fit. You may actually need to provide emotional support and reassurance for these people to keep them coming back and maybe even have a personal trainer for them. Health issues, these are people going perhaps because of the doctor's orders. They typically don't overly enjoy exercise programs. They see it as a chore, but they can benefit from personal trainers and relationships with that fitness staff. They don't really enjoy it, so often they're going to be short-term clients. The making friends group, not really interested in the fitness benefits, but like to mix and mingle with folks. They're probably moderately fit to begin with. They enjoy some fitness activities, but you probably have to have a variety of exercise classes, fun, energetic, some space in the facility for mixing with other people, maybe a small refreshment bar or shop. Sports focus, these folks want to help improve their strength and general fitness. They're very motivated. They want exercise classes and equipment that support their particular sporting requirement. And sometimes you just get stuff that is provided by your employer. So you might be able to sell in a B2B environment, membership in your class for their folks. And then you offer workplace lectures, discounted memberships, on-site workshops for people. Different needs, wants, and desires from these different groups of people imply different marketing mixes to satisfy them with your fitness center. Now that we've established that there are different groups with different needs, wants, and desires, we have to know who they are. What are their characteristics? What do prospects share that makes them different from other segments who have other needs or wants or desires? Can we characterize them in some way? For example, maybe members of a particular occupation have a special need for a boot. What kind of occupation might have a need for a particular boot? Military. Military is, I guess, B to G, business to government, but it's a special kind of boot, right? Who else? What other occupation might have a special need for a boot? Construction might have a special need for a boot. Who grew up on a farm, a ranch? How about Western, cowgirl, cowboy, a special need for a boot? So there might actually be segments for the boot market that you could focus on, given their needs, wants, desires, what they value, what they do for their occupation, a way of describing a target market. So blue-collar workers, steel toes, waterproof plain toe, compact toe, material guard, etc., or the boot barn, cowboy, cowgirl, maybe you never got on a horse, you just like the look sort of thing, as a fashion statement. But these two sort of occupations might represent a way to describe two different market segments. Then you need to determine the segment's size. How big are they in terms of numbers of people, in terms of size of sales, dollar size, yeah? How much do they have to offer you there? And obviously, how well are they being satisfied by their current offering? They're 100% satisfied with what people are already doing. How are you getting in there? What's your unique selling proposition? There's some dissatisfaction. They want some different things. Now you have an opening. So how large is the segment in terms of numbers of people or businesses, their demand, their dollars, potential sales? How urgent is their need? How dissatisfied are they with their current options? I sometimes have to recall if I've used examples or not before. Anybody old enough to remember carrying discs around on your hip in a... I forget what they called. What were they called? Discman? Discman player. Anybody remember those? Everybody here is too young to remember that. So anybody ever see a, I bet, if you don't know a disc, anybody know an 8-track? 8-track? Nobody knows 8-track. Anybody remember the original, was it iPod that was just the player? iPod was just a music player. So it was fine for what it was. It replaced several of the things I just mentioned. It was pretty good. Did it take you a long time to switch from carrying music on an iPod to carrying music on a smartphone? Or did you do that pretty quickly? Well, okay, in principle, pretty quick to change, because I tell you what, the smartphone does all the music and does a whole bunch of other stuff too. So a lot of these things went away because there was a desire for something new and we were able to fulfill them with a new product. How strong is the existing competition? In the general tea market, Lipton is pretty strong. I'm not going to go well head-to-head with them. But maybe in that organic tea area, they're not so strong. I have an opportunity there. Forecasts, obviously, are going to help us to determine which of those various segments, fashion, technology, low price, are the ones worth pursuing for me, given my resources, who I am, my mission, what I can do. Textbook talks more about forecasting. So done right, this should allow us to determine the size of the segment, the urgency of the need, the strength of the competition, and forecasts are going to help us determine whether or not the segment seems appealing to us. Looks like that's just a restatement. So what are some conditions that we might think about to tell us whether or not a segment is useful to us? Well, first of all, can you get any data on them? Somebody said to you that they understand just from chit-chat around the water cooler or whatever that a lot of guys in the manufacturing industry today, still around, people still make stuff, like to go out and kick back a couple beers over lunch before they go back to machine operation. And really, nobody's targeting that segment. How easy would it be to find data on machine operators that go out and kick back for a couple beers over lunch? Is that going to be easy data to get? Hi, you work in a machine shop, don't you? Do you drink beer over lunch? Not me. That could be silly and hard to get. Suppose somebody said that they heard that there was a desire for wine coolers in the age group of women living in New England between the ages of 25 and 40. Could you get that data? I bet you could, right? So can you get the data to measure the segment? Is there a data available to describe the segment for environmentally friendly products? Well, in some cases, yes. In some cases, no. This is a solar-powered lawnmower. And the idea is that solar-powered lawnmowers might appeal to people of particular ages. And so is age measurable? Yeah. Can you get the data? Yeah. How strongly do you like environmentally friendly products? Well, here's the problem. Hardly anybody says to you, nope, I'm against the environment. No, I don't want an environmentally friendly product. It's harder to get that data than it is to get your age. So it's harder to measure how exciting and whether they pay for a environmentally friendly lawnmower, right? What data do you need? Can you actually get the data? Then, is that segment accessible? Can you reach them? Can you reach them with your existing institutions? That is to say, your channel of distribution. You've decided that there's a need for your product in Nepal because you studied global marketing. What do you know about the channel of distribution of getting your product into stores in Nepal? Nothing. I don't know anything. How are you going to reach those consumers? What language are they? I don't know anything about that. Probably not a good start to things, right? So can we reach the market with our existing institutions, our middlemen, our advertising, our media? Are there newspapers that we can use to reach people with? Local newspapers, regional newspapers, national newspapers in print or online? Can we get to them on the internet? I don't know. Anybody know how widespread the internet is in Nepal? Me either. So I don't know. Does it work for that target market? I don't know. I have to look. So targeting with Google AdWords or Facebook ads. They have so much information about their customers that you can use to find your perfect local customers, not in Nepal, but in Kent. They have powerful targeting capabilities. You can target locally or nationally with these platforms. If you know what you're doing with their settings, and you're creating ads that evoke emotion, that work with consumers, so they might be accessible. You also can reach different segments. How many of you guys still listen to radio? I forget if we answered that question before. Radio? Really? Just one person? How about in the car? You don't listen to radio in the car? A couple people. How many of your parents listen to radio? How about them? All right, we got a different segment out there, the rents. And so different radio stations in Cleveland or in Akron can be used to segment your message to a particular audience. So if your market is into classic hits, you can use WMJI. If they're urban, you can use WZAK. If they like classic rock, WNCX. News or talk, WTAM, etc. Sports, WKRK. Classical, etc. So these, of course, would have a lot more detail into the segment that you're reaching using this radio station. Might be a way to reach people. Is the segment you're considering large enough to be profitable? Discovering and satisfying consumers' needs, wants, and desires at a profit through an integrated effort of the firm. Can you make money in this segment? Creating a new product or service and advertising it and distributing it and facing down competition is expensive. So as you mull over this segment that you're going to deliver in a new marketing mix for, is there enough size, demand, and sales to provide the profit that you're going to need? For example, it's possible, in some cases, to be successful by treating each customer as a separate segment. through something called mass customization. Anybody ever order a Dell computer online by any chance? Dell computer? No? So when you go out there, they're going to offer you a bunch of different models, desktops, laptops, PCs, whatever. And within each model, you can pretty well tell it the processor you want, the RAM you want, the number of ports you want, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now, it's not going to also make a car for you. They're going to make a computer. But you can pretty well customize it to your particular specifications. So they do mass customization. They'll assemble computers to your individual exact specifications. With Nike ID, you can have a shoe that you design, that they make, delivered to you in 3 to 5 weeks. Here's AF1 by Nike members. These folks are developing their looks. And you can, how to Nike by you, how you can design your own shoe. Mass customization. They're not making a computer, but they're making you a specialized shoe. So that may make every individual a potential market segment. We can create segments based on the consumer's need for buying at a very broad level. So broadly speaking, we have the B2C market. You guys are buying things for your personal use. And the B2B market, the business market. Companies that are buying products in order to resell them, to use them in what they make, to make their own profit. So in a general sense, those are two segments. But obviously, those things are way too broad. Some companies, of course, work across both segments. So Black & Decker, how many of you guys know Black & Decker? We know that brand, right? Black & Decker has a line of power tools for the consumer who works occasionally on small tasks. And then they use the DeWalt line of power tools for professionals. As you can see, just to look at them, they don't look that different. But the power, the durability, the craftsmanship between the two and the price is quite different. So there are two different segments out there for this company. One for the professional B2C, one for the professional B2B, one for the ultimate consumer B2C.
We have.
So here's Felber talking a little bit about segmentation in a B2B services environment.
We have put our stake down in manufacturing, which is very strong in many segments. Despite what people may think about manufacturing, and whenever you're hearing this video, you may say manufacturing is dead. It's not. There are many, many companies doing very, very well. Many companies, especially in this region of Northeast Ohio, know how to make things. We view that we do not need 300, 400, 800 of those clients. We only need a couple. So to find out those good manufacturers, we work with the manufacturers in the business-to-business segment. We have some specialties in green marketing and early stage clients, and social networking is layers to our service, but our stake has been on manufacturers in the business to business, and we try to apply all the different manufacturing knowledge that we've learned from all different companies, whether it's aerospace or steel or flooring or roofing.
So broadly speaking, manufacturing, of course, that's very broad. It has lots of companies there, but they're a small shop. They don't need, whatever you said, 300 or 400 companies. They only need a few to be successful that they work with. But of course, there's sub-segments within manufacturing, and they're focusing on those that are doing green marketing and early stage clients, and then they are able to apply for what they've learned from a variety of areas to these current folks in their current market segment. So let's take a look at some key bases for doing segmentation. The broad bases are based on geographic, demographic, psychographic, and behavioral on the B2C side. So my comment here is that just dividing into the ultimate consumer and the business market is too broad. There's more segments than that. And on the consumer side, we have these broad bases for segmentation. Let's just think about geographic for a minute and think about the region of the country that we are marketing in. And we'll just be very stereotypical to move along with the conversation. What region of the country are you going to sell more snowmobiles in? Maine or California? Maine, right? I think. And where are we going to sell more surfboards, stereotypically? Maine or California? California. So food tastes. If you're in New England, stereotypically, things like Boston clam chowder. probably not as big a sell in Texas. How about hot Tex-Mex spicy food? Probably not as big a sell in New England. What are the various needs, wants, desires by region that you're in? City size could be an issue. What about urban or suburban? You work for Marks Manufacturing and we're manufacturing security systems for an urban market. Does the urban market need a security system? Anybody ever been to someone's apartment in New York City? Do they just have like a simple door lock? They got the door lock, they got the slide bolt, they got the thing that leans up against the thing, they got the vibration thing, they got the whole thing. I can sell a lot of Marks security equipment to urban environment. What about suburban? They probably don't have five locks and the bolt and the whatever, but they probably have the camera. Maybe they have an extra lock, right? Am I going to sell a lot of security systems to rural consumers? Stereotypically, what are we going to use for security out in the rural areas? Shotgun and a dog. Boom. Woof. Okay. So I'm probably not going to sell as many security systems there as we do in the big city. I'm our manufacturing. I manufacture magnificent manure to help products grow. Am I going to sell a lot on the farm? Possibly. Yes, no. Manure? Grow crops? Just say yes. Yes, and how are you going to want that shipped? How do you want it delivered? Would you imagine? On a farm. Notice? Fresh manure. Well, hadn't thought about that, but maybe. But how do you want to get it? How's it going to come? Packaged. Okay, this is not really the hard question. It's not a big essay. How do you think people want it on a farm? So, on a farm, you might want to buy the, I don't know, truckload, yeah? It's right for your farm. How would you want it in the suburban area? Do you want manure there for your, you want a truckload of it? Probably. You want a 25-pound bag, 50-pound bag, package that way. What about urban consumers? Might they have a need for my fresh manure products? The initial answer is no, but even they have the little house plants. They might want to grow healthy, the little window box plants. But they also don't want the truckload. They don't want the 50-pound bag. They want it in the little 1-pound box, right? So we can say that the different geographic segments suggest different things about our marketing mix, different needs about the needs, wants, desires of the consumers. Demographic, if you don't understand that men and women have different needs in some areas, I'll explain that to you after class. By age, race or ethnicity, a long-time complaint being dealt with more recently was that makeup manufacturers focused on Caucasian skin tones. African-American women and Hispanic women who have somewhat darker skins are saying, wait a minute, what about us? It doesn't make sense. Some companies, of course, have begun to develop cosmetics to match the various skin tones of different types of people based on race. We talked before about family life cycle, and your life stage would influence the sorts of things that you're going to buy. Psychographics, certainly we talked about in consumer, understanding the consumer, we talked about your personality. Are you gregarious, compulsive, extroverted, aggressive, ambitious? Different needs, wants, and values are associated with that. And behavioral segmentation. Where do you like to physically go to shop? Do you like to use online marketing? How much do you use of the product? Are you a light user, a medium user, a heavy user? One study showed that 80% of cola products are bought by 20% of the market. This is a fairly small percentage of the market that has a huge impact on your purchases. Would it be good to know who those heavy users are and not to piss them off with your advertising campaign, your product rollout, or whatever? The 80-20 rule applies in a variety of areas, including sometimes your segment. 20% of the folks are buying 80% of your product. You better know who those folks are. And of course, are they even aware of you? If people don't buy products they're not aware of, are they aware of you, interested in you, intending to buy? Are they purchasing you, or are they rejecting you? So these are some bases for segmenting consumer markets: geographic, demographic, psychographic, and behavioral. This is an example of demographic targeting by age, a demographic. So on the left-hand side, we see a Crest electronic toothbrush. How many of you guys use the electronic toothbrushes? I tried it. It's a lot of work. I don't know. What do we have on the right-hand side? Well, it's an electric toothbrush. Functionally not that different, but of course it's targeted to the youth of America. And who are our characters reaching the youth of America? Who is there? Dora the Explorer and Boots, her monkey, okay? Obviously appealing to the younger target audience. The adults have to buy it, but you got to get the children interested in demographic marketing for essentially the same product, an electric toothbrush. Psychographic segmentation. The American population is obviously diverse. They have different amounts of wealth. And marketing research from a firm called Claritas combines census data and age information and lifestyles and other variables to create 14 different segments. And they go out to the 40,000 plus US zip codes and they divide those into 14 groups and 66 similar customers or segments. The idea is that consumers in a segment buy similar cars, read similar magazines, and watch similar TV shows. So what's that mean? If you're doing direct mail promotions or selecting locations for your retail store or determining the best mix of products and brands, you can do it based on these segments. To be hugely stereotypical, and just to move through my last few minutes, picture, how many of you guys know Beechwood as an area, as a neighborhood? Beechwood? Picture Beechwood. How many of you guys know Ravenna? Picture Ravenna. Do you imagine that those two areas represent the same demographics, the same income levels, the same level of education? They're different. Would you imagine that the same retail mix, the same products, the same offerings would appeal equally to those two groups? Okay? So there's an idea, and we're going to pick up more next time. Psychographic segmentations are different in those areas. All right, this ends the material that will be on whatever our most recent mini test is, which was 7, which will open tomorrow. Thank you very much. See you next time.